And this will be our second directly live recorded meditation class for the Meditation Course podcast. And so hopefully the audio will be better for this one. And today's topic is mood and meditation. So the thing about mood, if you speak to different people, they'll tell you different things about their mood. Kind of we all, you know, we it's difficult to pin down what it is, but we know it when we see it. And it can be viewed as, you know, good mood or low mood. Now, the thing is, a lot of people begin meditating because their mood. They feel anxious, they might feel despairing, they feel sad, they feel lonely, whatever it might happen to be. And they want to meditate because they believe that that will benefit them and it'll alleviate their mood or help them to get to the root of it, which is also quite a common desire, and help them to work with their emotions and so on. And all of that makes absolute sense. And so that creates an expectation, and that expectation, it could be met, but it may also not be met, and it may also not be met as quickly and effectively as we'd like, because we live in a world of instant expectations and gratification. You know, the Amazon Prime element of modern life, there's a desire for some benefit straight away, no matter what it is. But the thing is that the benefits accumulate without doubt for meditation. They accumulate slowly, and one of the reasons is that, let's say we're suffering from low mood for some reason, that's accumulated slowly. So it may have taken us decades to get to where we are at the moment. And it's going to take us years to unravel that. So that's at all levels. It's at the level of finding a way to intervene in our mood. So I have low mood now. I might feel unmotivated. There you go. I might feel avoidant. I might feel lonely. I might be ridden with doubts. So it goes on and on. You know, this is a human condition in the modern world. I'm pretty confident that our distant ancestors never experienced this. I think it's all a consequence of modern life. But here we are, and we need to make the most of it. So I might experience all of this, but what I notice is that my experience of it waxes and wanes. So I might feel quite despairing one day and quite decent the other. And the thing is about the accumulation of emotional benefits from meditation, that's not linear. So it's not, you know, an extra benefit every month or every quarter or every 6 months. What happens, the progress that we make, if you want to and you know, you can feel free to do so, measure it with your mood overall. What tends to happen is there's not much change, and then something changes and you notice a difference, and then nothing much happens. And during that period of nothing much happening, what's happening is your mood is fluctuating. So that means on some days, you know, on a bad mood day, on a sad day, on a unsatisfactory day, you're experiencing what you perceive to be the opposite of progress. Because if we desire our mood to improve consistently and it doesn't, then there's a sense that we're not making any progress. So it's important to keep that in mind. And I do explain this, for instance, in the courses. I say to people, progress is 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. And the 2 steps back are very real. There's another element of mood and meditation, which is that our mood can intervene in our motivation to meditate. Yeah, so let's say I'm feeling sad and despairing and lonely. My motivation to do this practice diminishes. And so that the answer to that is in the frictionless way practices. Okay. Things like walking meditation. I'm going to do some training on walking meditation if we do the August day retreat, and I'm fairly certain we'll do that. Everybody walks somewhere every day. This is irrespective of what your mood consists of. This is something that you can do because it's an activity. And what, you know, in the modern world, our solution to everything is an activity. Yeah, do something, distract yourself. That's the message from the common narrative on how to deal with low mood. And so that's okay. While we're doing something, while we're doing our walk, we can do a walking meditation. Another thing you can do is tune in to these classes. And I know some of you do that. It alleviates your mood, cheers you up, relaxes you, calms you. That's why you do it, which is good. There's also the podcasts, and you can plug into other meditations. But if you're not up to meditation, then do something for your body. Do something to reset your physiology. And right at the top of the list is the breathing practices. And they can be done wherever you are and whatever you're doing. So, and you know, if other people are a problem, and we know other people can be a problem, can't they? Then use your skills, the breath, to regulate your response to their suffering. I'm pretty confident as I look around myself, and this is one of the reasons that I suggest that the modern world is responsible for a lot of our suffering, is that it actually comes from other people, you know? And we'll take it on unless we're careful. We need to build a boundary. And the breath is a powerful way to do that. Focusing on the breath while somebody is, they might be being negative, they might be being critical, they might be being, might be saying something unhelpful or destructive or repetitive or pointless or wallowing in regret or, you know, themselves. And you'll end up taking it on. So the building a boundary, the breath is a very powerful way to do that. And it's also a powerful way to engage in meditation when you have a low mood. So that's what we'll do today, is begin the class with some breathing practices. So now let's assume that you know, you don't feel great, and some of you won't. So see how this goes. And then if you find it useful, then you can build this as a template for your practice to respond to when you don't feel that great. So if you just like to get comfortable, and focus your attention on the sound of the bell as it moves through time. Make most of the sound of the bell. By using it as a training opportunity to connect to the present moment through awareness of the movement of sound through time. Just like we can also notice the movement of the belly through time. So long as you observe the entire cycle of the belly moving all the way up and all the way down. So a powerful technique to learn is what Thich Nhat Hanh taught. Which is that of placing your palm right at the top of the belly. So your thumb is at the point where the belly meets the chest. And I teach it in a slightly different way to him, which is that we can effect this by breathing into our hand. And the way we do that is breathe in through the nostrils, down into the chest and into the hand from the inside. And then as the hand falls, the belly falls out through the nostrils, in through the nostrils, breathing into your hand, the other way, out of the hand, through the belly, the chest, the nostrils. We're not regulating the breath here. although this does promote deep breaths. Through a thing called diaphragmatic breathing. And by doing this, we gently, softly process the emotions. And very often they subside. Just practice this for the next couple of minutes. Gently breathing into the palm from the belly. Okay, so now continue that, but with the hand moved. So you open balanced and relaxed posture, head balanced comfortably, elbows by the side, feet on the floor, fingers and thumbs very gently in contact. And you're breathing into that place where the palm of the hand was. And you have to learn this without the palm of the hand, because this is what you do when someone's giving you a hard time. They're trying to push your buttons, and you are noticing the belly rising and falling. Still focusing on the breath, lifting the belly, causing it to rise and fall. Leaving the body to manage the depth of the breath and the speed of the breath. And now we're noticing the breath filling the belly, breathing into that spot. And now what we're doing, we're regulating the breath by extending the out breath a tiny little bit. Just by making it audible. Now checking in with the shoulders. Helps if your elbows are by the side. Still making the out breath audible and allowing the weight of the arms to pull the shoulders down. tongue gently against the sharp part of the bottom teeth. Gently in contact with the back of the top teeth. And bring your awareness to the eyes and the jaw and the face. With still just a slightly extended out breath, just by making it audible. Now, stepping back in your awareness, open your awareness to allow a sense of the entire body. We're still breathing into the top of the belly. We're still allowing the out-breath to be extended. Now open up your awareness to the space around the body. This is the space outside the skin, up to 1 to 2 palms widths away from the body. And the way that we sense this area around the body is by extending the sense of touch. There's a feeling that we can feel the space around us. And it's around our entire body. It's above our head, to either side, in front and behind, around the neck and shoulders and arms and hands, around the chest and back, lower back, belly, hips, thighs, buttocks, knees, calves, shins, and around the feet. And within this space, we become aware of our body, breathing in and out from the top of the belly. We're able to notice the breath moving through time, following the breath all the way in and all the way out. Into the belly, out through the lungs, throat, nostrils, just noticing that moving through time. And open your senses to the ambient sound, whatever that might happen to be, whatever you can hear. Notice that moving through time. And the sound of the bell moving through time. and gently in your very, very own time, return your attention to your surroundings. Okay, so the focus for today, the topic for today, is the mechanics of nature meditation. It's very interesting. When I did my nature meditations, like I've mentioned a few times, probably you've heard me say this, I didn't really recognize how important meditating in nature was. I ascribed, and this is typical, it's a typical human bias. We ascribe our successes to ourselves and our failings to external events. This is a thing called the illusion of control. So when things go our way, our illusion of control kicks in. And it's really nice to believe that it's the techniques. It's the techniques that I use. It's the way that I meditate. It gives you this feeling of agency. Now, as things stand at the moment, I have those techniques and I can use them in a more artificial environment. So I can, if I was to feel really difficult emotions, I'd be able to process them without actually having to go and sit in nature to do it. But looking back at it, I think it's highly probable, because the nature meditation environment that I sought out was so far, just to get as far as I possibly could from any human sounds, any human experiences. I just wanted to be around trees and birds and plants. I didn't even want agricultural land. I wanted woodland or heathland or somewhere where there was nobody. And I perceived, passing walkers as an annoying intrusion into that, and airplanes and traffic noise and all of this kind of stuff. And that's kind of pretty standard. A lot of people do that. See that, these incidental noises, sounds rather, which are part of our modern world, are intrusions on their personal quiet, calm place that they want to be in. And my personal quiet, calm place, I wanted to be in nature. I think it's probably likely that if I hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have been able to internalize these skills to the point where I can now use those skills without actually needing to go out into nature. And if you want to learn those skills, come along on the 20th, because that's what I'll be teaching. And so what I'd done is I'd set up a cyclical process. And what it consisted of was I was using being in nature to help me process my emotions and my baggage. That was helping me to release the barriers that I'd created between myself and the natural world and other people. And then that new connection to the natural world and to other people then helped me heal in another way. And I've seen this a multitude of times. I've seen people who are really struggling, and then as they heal, what happens is they connect. So you might have somebody who's feeling alone and lonely and rejected and isolated and fearful. And then after a time, as their healing evolves, and everybody's healing is different, this is just a path to healing through nature and through meditation. What happens is they reconnect, and you know they hear you hear that they've joined some group, that they've got, there's a relationship that's arisen and in contact with more people. And well, the end result of that very often is they come along to the meditation classes less, which is fine. Yeah, it's not that I want to sit, I want to have that process. I want people to come along, learn the benefit of the skills, use them, heal, grow, connect, repeat. And so the what happens in a meditation when we're healing is an entirely personal and private thing. But there is a pattern to it. This is something that I mention in the 6-week course, what I call the Gaia process. We acknowledge our feelings and our suffering and our emotions and all, you know, whatever it might happen to be. And by acknowledging it, what we're actually doing is labeling it. It needs a name. Yeah, so let's say fear. There you go. So well, fear of some event, anxiety about some event. I've named it. The next process is to accept it, and that's easier said than done. And the reason for that is because the whole thing can appear overwhelming. You sit down, you're beginning your meditation, you may not have meditated before, the mind's so noisy, it keeps going back to whatever the melodrama of the day is. The melodrama of the day might not actually be the source of your suffering. That could be something that's happened in the past. For example, it might be your current situation. But generally the mind's going to sort of current problems and future problems. It's not going to, I am an anxious person and I'm aware that my anxiety is out of proportion to the things that I'm anxious about. It doesn't go there. Instead it goes to, I've got to do this, do that. I'm worried about this. I'm anxious about that. And so all of this is going on at the same time. And so there's a process of really calming the mind and then working with the emotions. It doesn't really come second, but if the mind is not able to focus, focus is part of the process of acceptance, which is the second part of this process of healing, the Gaia process. So we acknowledge it, you know, I have this, might be anxiety, might be fear of the future, fear of failure, fear of success, fear of poverty, fear of rejection, whatever it might happen to be. And you know, the list is infinite and changes from one person to the other. It might not even be that, there might be other emotions. So we've got the name for it. Accepting it, that's the difficult bit. And nature can do that for us. Nature, when we're in nature, it literally absorbs our stress. We can go to some place. Most of us have these places in our mind, natural places we can go to. We can sit down and it absorbs our stress. And the stress is the body's response to the anxiety. And the anxiety and the worry. The worry is in the mind, and the anxiety is also in the mind, but it manifests itself through the body as emotion. And by processing it, by accepting it, we are able to release it. And then we can move on. And then, unfortunately, for most of us, a few decades old, human beings, we've got in a few years worth of work in this area. It's not a quick process because it took a while to get there. It's going to take a while to release it. But that is the process, and I'm increasingly more convinced as time goes on that the location being outside, as you go through this process of acknowledging and accepting and releasing your personal emotional baggage, being in nature is a pivotal part of that. And then while that happens, these barriers break down. You find yourself connecting in ways and with people that you wouldn't have thought possible before. That's definitely happened to me. So that's just an insight into my personal opinion. Although I don't believe I'm alone in having this opinion. My personal perspective on a very powerful path to making personal development progress. Just like to get yourselves comfortable. And step through the portal in the barrier between us and the present moment. The modern mind creates a barrier between us and the present moment. And noticing the sound of the bell move through time, we step through that barrier, through the portal of the sound. And that experience of stepping into the present moment brings us to an awareness of the hubbub of the present moment. Human voices. Traffic, airplanes, various sounds, movements of the breath, rising and falling, wind in the trees, and we're allowing the present moment to carry us through time. Like a leaf's carried along a stream. And the experiences we notice, the breath cycle, sounds, the chatter of the mind, it's like the banks of the stream passing as the leaf floats along on the stream. We're allowing ourselves to be carried through time by the present moment. If we observe thought, then witnessing the passage of thought through time will also carry us through it. Then we're listening out for thought. Because we can recognize that thought is part of the hubbub of the present moment, just like feelings are. Any bodily sensations. All of the events in the present moment, what we can see, what we can hear, the inner dialogue, whether we're aware of it chattering away or whether we've adopted a mantra and we're repeating the mantra. All of the inner and outer phenomena the most favored one to focus on is the breath. We're observing the cycle of the breath, the rising and falling of the breath. And because of its constant movement, the breath becomes the energy that we connect to. Guides us through time. Belly rising, belly falling. And you can note the cycle of the breath. If it works for you. What we're doing with this is we're noticing the breath rising and falling, and then we're noting it. Saying in the mind, rising and falling. And we notice the natural tendency for the breath to follow the noting. Instead, we want the noting to follow the breath. But we just want to be the witness of the breath. And when the breath rises, we say rising. And when the breath falls, we stay falling. So our focus is on the breath. We're waiting it for to rise, waiting for it to fall. And now we can regulate the breath. Checking in with the breath, checking in with the body. Just witnessing the posture of the body. Noticing the tendency to lean forward. To have tension in the posture. And instead releasing that tension. Noticing the out breath, extending it ever so slightly. And the easiest and most frictionless way to do this is to just make it slightly audible. The more sound, the longer the breath. Just a tiny little sound in the throat or in the mouth or in the nostrils. Or in the chest. And we're gently extending the out breath. So now checking in with the body again and asking the question, where is the tension or where is the discomfort? And then we bring our attention to that place. Could be the shoulders, could be the jaw, the eyes, the face, the hands, wherever. There's either tension or discomfort or both. We bring our awareness and our extended out breath to it. And we note in the mind, releasing, releasing. Tension in the jaw. Place my tongue against the sharp part of the bottom teeth. I make sure that my head is balanced comfortably and my elbows are by the side. I notice the out breath moving down. Nostrils, mouth and lips, jaw and throat. And on each out breath, I'm saying in the mind, releasing, releasing. Similarly, any tension in the neck, the back, any discomfort. Associating the out-breath, the extended out-breath with the tension. We want to practice this to the point where it becomes habit. And two things happen. One is we become aware of the tension, and the other is we become aware that we're using the tool to release it. So for the shoulders, we're scanning down from the base of the skull down to where both arms are hanging. And if we sit with our elbows back and the head balanced comfortably, each out breath, the shoulders are a little bit lower. Similarly, so with thought, each time that we notice that the mind's wandered, releasing that train of thought. Back to the breath, rising and falling. Noticing the sound of the bell passing through time. Noticing the sound of the bell passing through time. Whenever you're ready, gently return your attention to your surroundings.